Thank you for coming to the podcast. This is Top Turtle MMA Podcast on cage.press.com. I'm Daniel Gumby Freeland, joined as always by my co-host Shockwave Dave Tremonte. The UFC is finally off this week. That's right, after UFC 300, they got to take a little tiny break, but that doesn't mean we will be. In fact, we are going to be doing our combat countdown this week of the biggest fights the UFC could still make. That's right, if you had to headline a pay-per-view right now, we've got five fights that we think the UFC should make to do so. Plus, as always, we've still got the interviews you know and love. Kicking off the show this week is former NFL player and current UFC heavyweight Austin Lane, who is going to be fighting at UFC Vegas 90. And on that same card will be our second guest, Austin Hubbard, who is getting ready for his first fight after the Ultimate Fighter finale. But before we get to any of that great content for you, I do have to let you know that this episode of Top Turtle MMA Podcast is brought to you by Game Up Heart Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Heart Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, this is no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. It's a drink that's, well, it's really drinkable. Should you stretch before you drink it? Well, it certainly couldn't hurt. Because Game Up is not a hard seltzer. Hard seltzers just didn't work out. Game Up plays entirely in a league of its own, and it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit punch, and grape, and hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Game Up is for MMA maulers, urban fitness freaks, peak-bagging badasses, tough mutter mothers, beer league brawlers, hot yoga hotties, high handicap hackers, committed cornhole hookers, or even just professional poolside posers who game up and get after it. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team. Game Up brings you this episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast, and it starts right now.
The hosts are ready. The fighters are ready. Listeners, make some noise if you are ready for Top Turtle MMA with Shockwave and Gumby.
All right, joining me today is Austin Lane, who fights Jonathan Deniz at UFC Vegas 91. That fight is on April 27th. So, Austin, obviously, before we get to talking about the fight, before we get to talking about your career and all of that, you're fighting the same weekend as the NFL draft. So, of course, I've got to ask, what are your Jaguars going to do at 17, or what do you think they need to do at number 17?
Yeah, man, I mean, I'm not breaking any news here. In my opinion, with, you know, the 17th pick, it's wide receiver or bust. If you don't have out Trevor Lawrence, if you don't get him that go-to one receiver, I think you're doing him a disservice. So I want to see Jacksonville get a wide receiver with the first round pick.
I love it. I love it. You had that answer at the ready. You've been thinking about this, huh?
I mean, yeah, man. I also do a little sports radio as well, and that's been probably the biggest topic around the city for the past 2 months or so since the season's been over. So, yeah, you know, I mean, they have a couple more things that need to be filled in terms of holes and trying to get better. But in my opinion, man, the most important thing is taking care of your quarterback. You take care of your quarterback by getting him a weapon.
I dig it. I dig it. Now, let's talk about getting better, too, because I wanted to talk about the beginning of your career here. And, you know, you had like a very quick start to your career. Not a lot of guys jumping on contender series at 4-0, you know, getting sort of that big shot right out the gate. And you got that shot and it didn't work out for you. You had the tough fight with Greg Hardy. How do you feel about that looking back? Do you feel like it was too much too soon? Are you kind of glad that you got that under your belt?
No, man. I mean, honestly, you know, it's kind of a give and take situation. I'm glad that it happened because it kind of showed what I need to work on, you know, and that was still early on in my career. Say I beat Greg Hardy. I go on to the UFC from there. I'm the fighter that I was when I fought Greg Hardy. I'm not sure how long I last in the UFC. You know, I think I'm a more well-rounded striker now. I think I'm more versed everywhere now. And that's just been with years of honing my craft. You know, and I think after every loss, you can either say, you know, you can try to find excuses for why the fight didn't go the way you wanted. Or you can be a man about it, look yourself in the mirror, see what you did wrong, correct those mistakes, and get better. And that's what I've did with the Greg Hardy fight. And that's what I've done with every one of my losses so far.
And you mentioned in there becoming more of a complete striker. Was there an aspect of that part of your game, or even, you know, your game is a more complete picture, that you thought needed the most work? Was there something that you took away from that fight that were like, this clearly, this is number one priority?
Yeah, so basically what it comes down with that fight was going back to the basics a little bit, you know, because in my fights prior up until that point, you know, I got by with my athleticism, with my power, and especially at heavyweight, you know, man, all it takes is one shot and people go to sleep. But it's about trying to find that button in the correct path, because if you overextend yourself, if you try to swing for the fences, you leave yourself open a little more. That's when mistakes can happen, and that's when you get caught. And it's like I said, man, at heavyweight, all it takes is one shot. You're going to sleep.
And it does seem like, you know, I don't mean to you know, lump all of your opponents into one basket, because obviously you've now had a very long and storied career. But, like, do you feel like they tend to lead you to a path to fight more strikers? Because, you know, I'm thinking of Greg Hardy and the Taffa brothers you've been scheduled with, and Deniz, yeah, to an extent, is a kickboxer. Do you feel like they just, for some reason, seem to like you against that style of opponent?
I mean, maybe. Obviously, I have a lot of KOs in my record, so I think that makes for entertaining fights. You know, I mean, my fights don't really go a long time either. I mean, I've had one fight that has essentially been past three rounds, and that was for a title fight with Fury FC versus Juan Adams, and that was more of a grappling match for the first couple rounds before I ended up catching him. Yeah, I mean, listen, people love to see knockouts, right? I love to get knockouts. Like, I've had some submissions as well, and, like, yeah, it's cool to get the win, man, but there's something special about, you know, flatlining somebody, hitting somebody right on the button. I think the crowd loves that kind of entertainment. Obviously, I think Dana White and the matchmakers love the entertainment. So, yeah, I mean, I think I know what they're doing here, but at the same time, I also have to look with side by side and say, yes, I'm fighting now a kickboxer coming up, right? And he's a kickboxer, and he's a pretty good kickboxer. But I'm a fighter, and I have tools. I have things in my box that I haven't really unleashed yet that I could, you know? So it's got to start, and this is where, you know, I'm really taking my game to the next level now, where it's like, yeah, I'm always trying to look for that knockout, right? Because that's what I like to do. That's what I enjoy doing. But now it's got to be more under the scope of being an MMA fighter and taking the fight wherever it needs to go.
I like that. Now, you mentioned, you know, kind of always loving the knockout and that sort of being your thing. How early did you know in your career, like, this is the style, this is the thing that I like to bring? Was it immediately when you started boxing? Was it, you know, like, once you got your first taste of it in an amateur fight? How quickly did you know, like, oh yeah, this is a feeling I can't beat?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think honestly, it stems from years of football, you know, and granted, like, there's some things that can translate from playing at the highest of level in football and going to fighting. But obviously, I think that the biggest thing is my power, right? Especially my power in close space as well. So, I mean, you go back to my first couple of amateur fights, like, yeah, you know, I mean, all I got to do is touch somebody and then they went to sleep. So I kind of knew I always had power early on. I mean, you know, whether it's on the football field and taking on a tackle who's 320 pounds and pushing him back or putting him on his back, I always knew I had the explosiveness and the power. And now more, it's refining that, knowing it's always there, but now having the proper technique to land at the most opportune time.
I love that. Now, you've talked about that a couple of times already, right? We've talked about, you know, finding that moment, not overextending yourself, you know, like being a more complete boxer. I want you to tell us a little bit about your coaches, because I know Bulldog Boxing has been putting together, you know, a couple of fighters on the up and up. You got a couple of guys in the UFC now, and it's not a household name, right? It's not one of those names people think of as American Top Team or Fortis MMA or, you know, Jackson Wink. So tell us a little bit about Bulldog Boxing and a little bit about the coaches there.
Yeah, you know, so, I mean, Matt Bonnet at Bulldog Boxing was the first place to learn how to throw a punch, you know, and this took place during an NFL offseason one year when my defensive line coach suggested that I work on my hands a little bit, because obviously playing defensive line and playing defensive end, rushing the passer, it's all about your hand speed and your hand violence, as they call it. So I discovered Bulldog Boxing MMA, and, you know, it was kind of a match made in heaven from there. And what I enjoyed about that gym is that it didn't have all the bells and whistles. It was just great fighters who were not afraid to throw down, you know? So I kind of got thrown in the fire right away. And in doing that, I had a teammate by the name of Ramon Tavares, who just fought on UFC 297, had a fantastic performance himself. And, you know, we just kind of came up together. And Sometimes we found ourselves in our coach's front yard training. Sometimes we found ourselves in a gym. But, you know, we always brought that same mindset of it doesn't matter what we have. It's what we're about. And I think that's what the epitome of Bulldog boxing is, you know. And this fight camp, I've added more to my corner. I've added more now to my approach and just other guys looking at what I can do better. And if you look at Jacksonville right now, it's definitely on the come up in terms of UFC fighters. We have Ramon Tavares, who I've mentioned, my teammate. We have Steven Koslow. We have Trey Waters. We have Preston Parsons. And then we have Kuba Kazuba, who just won a couple months ago the PFL European Championship, and now he's going to do that again. And I actually started working with those guys a lot as well, just to kind of pick their brains a little bit, get some more eyes, get some more just, you know, kind of sharing their knowledge with me as well, because they've been in the mix, man. You know, they fought at the highest level, and they also know what it takes. So I just feel like the more people that I can kind of pick their brains a little bit and just see, you know, where I can improve, the better. And a prime example, last night, I got some good rounds in with Sean Strickland. Sean Strickland was in Florida. So we ended up kind of linking up a little bit and getting some great rounds in. And if you know anything about Sean, man, I mean, he's a fighter's fighter. He's not afraid to throw down with anybody. And we had some great rounds. I learned some stuff from him as well. I'm going to use in my fight coming up. So it's just picking as many brains as you can and then taking little bits here and there and then adding that to your game.
I dig that so much. Now, you've mentioned in there a couple of names, and obviously I know the kickboxing skills of the Ramon Tavares and the Jacob Kazubas of the world. But yeah. I'm curious, too, because you mentioned bringing a more complete game here, showing some of the things that you have not done before and doing so against the kickboxer. You know, I have to sit here and sort of assume that you're saying maybe we need to see a little bit of the grappling that exists in Boston Lane. Maybe we need to see that jiu-jitsu game show up a little bit. Has there been a lot of thought about that in this fight camp, about bringing that side ahead? And what are some of the names or some of the people maybe you've picked brains about bringing more of that game to the cage?
Yeah, man. I mean, obviously, it could be an option, right? Because it's like I said, this guy's a great kickboxer, but can he fight? And a fight can go a lot of directions. A fight can go a lot of ways. And I think I have the more complete skill set in terms of making it a fight. And when you talk about the grappling aspect of it, obviously, we've addressed that as well. And then there's a cat by the name of Alton Meeks, who is a extremely high-level Greco-Roman wrestler. You know, tried out the Olympic team a few times, has fought in the PFL a couple times. He's been in the gym almost two or three times a week, and he's been an immense help, because honestly, man, if I could hold my own with him in grappling, I know I could take anybody down in the UFC cage. So he's made things hard, as his job is to do. But obviously, I've been sharing some of my striking game with him. He's been sharing some of his grappling game with me. And he's been a great training partner, and I'm happy to, you know, have him in the gym with me.
I love that. Now let's get to the specifics on Jonathan Deniz here, because, you know, you mentioned he's a kickboxer. He's got a glory kickboxing background. He's a dude who it's pretty clear what he wants to do. Nobody is out here guessing what he wants to do. So when they dropped that name in your ear, they said, hey, this is who we want you to fight in your, you know, second UFC fight here. What were your initial thoughts? Had you heard of the guy before? What did you have to do in terms of research? What were your initial instincts on it?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, so I followed Dana White's, you know, Tuesday Night Contender Series pretty well. So I do remember him from his performance there, getting that UFC contract. I didn't follow him too much in terms of the Glory circuit. Like, I don't follow Glory kickboxing too much, but obviously I've studied a lot of film on him now. And yeah, I think it's a great matchup for me. You know, I think this is a guy that loves coming forward, that still treats stuff like a kickboxing match, and that's great. He's got great hands. Obviously, he's got the resume on his MMA record in terms of knockouts and everything, but I think I can provide a different skill set that he hasn't seen before, whether it's with movement, whether it's with, you know, my unique striking style, or whether it's with some things I'm probably going to pull out for this fight that people haven't seen before. So I think I can take the fight, like I said, a lot of different ways, which he isn't accustomed to. And I think it's going to have to be more from him than just, you know, trying to step forward and swing with me.
I love it. And you led me pretty much right down the path that I like to go on here. I always like to ask fighters before I let them go, how do you see this one ending? Give me a prediction for April 27th.
Man, I always say the same thing in my fights, right? It's going to be beautiful violence, man. And that's what I'm excited for. That's why I do this. Blood, violence. Let's go.
Well, we're looking forward to it. Once again, fans, this has been Austin Lane, who fights Jonathan Deniz at UFC Vegas 91. Once again, that fight, April 27th. Austin, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Daniel, man, I appreciate it. Stay casual, and we'll talk to you later.
Well, we enjoyed that interview with Austin Lane. Once again, I'm Daniel Gumby Freeland, joined now by my co-host, Shockwave Dave Tremonte. Dave, UFC 300 delivered in ways it didn't deliver in some other ways, but largely it delivered what the people were expecting. I figure we should start here by talking about Alex Pereira, who took care of Jamahal Hill in pretty devastating fashion, even waved off a nut kick in the process to go get that finish. Was that the easiest pick of all time at like -130?
Yeah, the odds were insane on that. And here's my other hot take. When you look at, you know, UFC 100 being headlined by Brock and Frank Mir, and GSP right there too, even Thiago Alves, I had
Hendo. Hendo was in that one.
And Bisping. So those three at the top of the card, I guess you could say that Alvarez would be like the outlier there, but you know, he was respectable. And I think we all thought he had a good chance of beating GSP. And then you go to UFC 200 and you have the GOAT female fighter headlining it in Amanda Nunes. It should have been Jones and DC. That unfortunately got taken away from us. You had Brock and Mark Hunt. I mean, those are two very influential names in the history of heavyweight MMA. And then, you know, Silva steps in. So he's a legend fighting DC. To me, again, I know it's a great moment. It's iconic. Pereira, who I'm a huge fan of, waving away Herb Dean. But we're going to look back in 5 years and say, what the fuck was Jamahal Hill doing headlining UFC 300?
Yeah, I saw a couple of analysts who I respect in the betting world who said, in retrospect, it feels like Pereira is probably not a top five light heavyweight right now, right? Because like, if you look down on that card, right, we had that really great fight between Alexander Rajcic and Jiří Procházka. I think almost everybody after that event can agree both of those people are better than Jamahal Hill, right? I said it when we were breaking down the fight. Who is Jamahal Hill beat? Jamahal Hill is beat Johnny Walker coming off of changing camps and moving halfway across the world. And like, let's face it, Johnny Walker, not a technical kickboxer, but like, apart from that, he beat a 45-year-old Glover Teixeira with 1 foot out the door. And other than like, there's not wins there for him to hang his hat on. Now, granted, one of those was for the title, and we will forever have to talk about Jamahal Hill as if he's the champion. But I'm with you on that. Like, if you look at the top three fights from the last two big centennial events, the least touted fighter on all of those was Thiago Alves, right? Thiago Alves, kind of the only outlier of the top nine fighters on the last two cards. And I think Jamahal Hill is far worse than he is.
I agree. That's my exact take as well. And I honestly, like, you know, again, it was a great moment. The fans went home happy. UFC did big business. So there's nothing really to take away from here. But I did have that feeling. It was a thought I had as a hardcore longtime fan where I was just like, you know, Hill is a product of too many cards, too many interim titles. There's just no, and also Jones too, like in all his legal trouble. And that's really, if Jones was still around, no one else is champion. There's probably no Glover Teixeira championship. There's no Jiří championship. There's no Hill championship. So Jones plays a big part in this as well. But to me, the only reason Hill was in that fight was because due to timing, he got a 45-year-old Glover Teixeira at the right time. And it's such a thin division, more or less. So to me, it's like, hey, great moment, but it just wasn't befitting of a centennial event.
Yeah, and hot take here, I actually think that yes, him getting an old and aged Glover Teixeira was a big part of it. But I also think the timing of this event was a big part of it too, because, you know, Israel Adesanya, not quite ready. This person, not quite ready. Tom Aspinall, not quite ready. And like, if any of those people are, I think Jamahal Hill gets passed up. I think Jamahal Hill doesn't even wind up with this fight if Tom Aspinall was willing to fight Alex Pereira or Israel Adesanya was ready for a short camp to fight Alex Pereira. I think those two not being ready and needing a little bit more time, I think that's the only reason you saw this fight happen.
Yeah, agreed. Well, I'll tell you what we're going to see happen. It's one of our favorite segments on the show, really tied for our favorite segment on the show. We're going to do a comeback countdown for the five biggest fights the UFC could make in the wake of UFC 300. And here we are talking about what fights should have headlined and who was deserving. Well, we're going to break it down in the top five list of what the big money fights are and the most logical fights are, using only fighters who are on the roster, not pulling out, you know, crazy like, hey, they could get Ngannou back. No, we're doing it in a rigid way, in a realistic way. But before we do, Gumby, I'm wondering, does anyone sponsor this edition of Combat Countdown?
Absolutely. The Combat Countdown is brought to you by Game Up Hard Hydration. Welcome to the game. Welcome to Game Up Hard Hydration, the new ready-to-drink beverage with sports drink flavor for adult drink fun. But make no mistake, this is no sports drink. It's a refreshing adult beverage with 4.9% alcohol by volume, a special blend of electrolytes, and way more than a hint of flavor. And it comes in all your favorite sports drink flavors, orange, lemon, lime, fruit, punch, and grape. And it hits all the right numbers at 110 calories, 1 gram of carbs. It's gluten-free, and it's got no added sugar. Ask for Game Up wherever it is you buy beer or hard seltzer, and bring it on home for the team.
All right, so again, we're using only fighters that are on the roster right now. We're not pulling anything out of our arses, as the British would say, and saying like, oh, Brock Lesnar's going to come back. Or even a Conor fight. First of all, Conor's already booked.
Sort of. Do you believe that's happening?
Who even knows? And again, we're trying, the way we did this was, these are, yes, the best money fights available, so Conor always has to be in that discussion, but also logical fights and fights we want to see. So if we're Booker for the day, these are the fights we're making. If I'm Booker for the day, I don't even know that I want to get Conor involved. I mean, this is a 1-4 fighter over the last 6 years. I'm actually kind of over that. So these are real fights for real fight fans. Let's start with number five. And it's the respective, you know, these guys have been the top of their weight divisions for the last year or so, 2 years. So we're talking about Islam Makhachev coming up from 155 and fighting Leon Edwards at 170. That's number five.
Yeah, and this one was sort of a product of not really having an exciting challenger for either of them. Obviously, Islam right now is booked with Dustin Poirier. And that's kind of an exciting money fight. But at the same time, like, do you really expect Dustin Poirier to do anything different against Islam than he did against Habib, right? Like jump Gilly and get dominated on top. So that's really not all that exciting of a fight for me. Going up in weight class, seeing if Islam can take down somebody who's a little bit heavier than him, I think makes it a really interesting one. We've seen Leon's takedown defense hold up. We've seen his takedown offense hold up, right? Like he's even scored a takedown here or there. Plus the kickboxing's on point. I think this would be a really exciting fight in the fact that both of them have a pretty big draw in their respective markets, right? Obviously, the British market seems to really like Leon Edwards. The Russian market loves Islam Makhachev right now. So it would be a great way to capitalize on a couple of international markets while also putting together a super fight that I think, you know, both of them kind of lack a 1A challenger right now. And I think this would clear it up quite a bit.
Yeah, and I really think this puts Islam to the test, standing on the feet with someone of a large size. I think, you know, could Islam get Leon down? Absolutely. But I also thought Kamaru could, too. So it's a really interesting stylistic matchup for me. And if this went into the fourth or fifth round, and we know the fifth round is going to start as all rounds do on their feet, I could see Islam really tiring. And I could see Leon, you know, scoring like a late stage KO. I'm very interested by that matchup. And I say that rooting for Islam. I do think Islam would win. My money would be on Islam. But boy, do I see a path to victory for Leon Edwards.
Yeah, and I think the odds would be close in this one, too, I have to say. I don't know who I would pick up the gate. My heart leans Leon just ever so slightly because we saw Islam struggle a little bit with the takedowns against Alexander Volkanovski in their first fight. And that's a dude down a weight class. So if we go up a weight class and a guy who can defend takedowns, I think we see him have even more trouble. So my heart says Leon Edwards, but I bet you the books would have it damn near a pickup.
Yeah. We'll move then to number four. And I am so excited for this fight that is going to happen. O'Malley would be defending his title at 135 against Mirab Davishvili. I want to see O'Malley lose, Gumby. And I think Davishvili has a great path to victory with just aggressive chain style wrestling and takedowns. And just try to avoid Sean O'Malley's, you know, power in his hands. To me, this is Conor versus Chad Mini Mendez, but Chad Mini Mendez hasn't been, you know, hunting, fishing, and drinking for the last 6 months and not taking it on a short notice. I really like Merab's chances in this, but then again, watch O'Malley knock him out in the second round. What do you think?
Yeah, first of all, love this fight. For me, if we're talking about just in terms of the, not necessarily the magnitude of this fight, but just like the stylistic intrigue of this fight, this one's number one for me. Stylistically, this is the most interesting fight because you got the really fun narrative of Sean O'Malley being the rangy striker, Murad Dzhavashvili being the relentless wrestler who comes out on top. It's kind of got almost like an old school UFC feel to it from a stylistic standpoint like that. And then in addition to that, you got Merab trying to avenge his friend, Aljamain Sterling. You know, he stole the red jacket, which of course is like a fun little piece. I hope they put that in all the highlight packages. I don't know when this fight is going to happen, but you're right. This is one of the most exciting fights they can make right now, certainly from the stylistic standpoint. But also, you know, O'Malley has slowly built himself a very popular, you know, very enthusiastic audience who loves him. And maybe it's not me and you. Me and you are not his target audience. But like young kids who, you know, watch video game streams and stuff, they seem to love this guy. So like he's built a different kind of audience than we've typically seen in MMA. I think that helped sell him in this fight. And then also just like I said, the stylistic stuff is really fun. So yeah, can't wait for this one.
All right. The next one I believe will happen as well. And you have Tom Aspinall against John Jones at heavyweight. Tom Aspinall is another one. I do respect him. I think he's a pretty good fighter. But I also wonder, in the same case of Jamahal Hill, is he just a product of a thinner division? Is he just a product of the fact that Ngannou left? You know, would Ngannou have just sort of like erased him from top of contention? I don't necessarily know yet. And I will say, you know, there is someone out there right now. If Jones does maybe two more fights, and even that is like, who knows with him and his personal life, someone is probably going to catch Jones on his way out and make a huge name for themselves. And maybe it might as well be Tom Aspinall. So the fight is very intriguing. I don't think Jones has looked anything of dominant over the course of his last five fights. And again, coming up at heavyweight, it's interesting. So it's a great matchup.
Yeah, and I think we would probably have more answers about Tom Aspinall and how good he is had that fight with Curtis Blaydes like actually happen, right? Because 15 seconds into that fight, his knee blows out. We don't see him for a little while. And like if he went in there and dominated Curtis Blaydes, we would be talking about him like, oh, we have answers. Because let's face it, he already went in there and he dominated Alexander Volkov. He went in there and he flatlined Sergey Pavlovich. He went in there and made Marcin Tybura look like he's never fought before. Those are no slouches, right? Those are good wins in this division. But if you had Curtis Blaydes to cap it all off, we would really have an answer on him. And I think that's really the only reason that this fight is all the way down at number three, right? Because John Jones is a certified seller when it comes to the UFC and pay-per-views. And I think if his B-side here was a little bit bigger than Tom Aspinall, or maybe, like you said, had a few less question marks around him than Tom Aspinall, I think this would be a number one type fight. With that being said, I think Tom Aspinall is extremely skilled. I love what I see out of him on the ground. Obviously, he's got the big power on the feet. He's quick. I'm really overwhelmed by how good his speed looks at times. I think he's the real deal. I believe that he's not just the product of the thin division. But I think to your point, if we're talking about which of these fights sell the best, yeah, he's got a little bit of that British audience behind him. But I think the rest of the world hasn't quite come around on Tom Aspinall yet. And I think that they would, given an opportunity to have a big fight like this.
All right. I agree with you completely. We'll move then to number two, getting up there. We have Max Holloway, who's really been a GOAT in a lot of ways at 145. I mean, Volkanovski's the GOAT because he beat Max Holloway, but Holloway has to be like, you know, 1B at 145. And now Ilia Topuria has beaten Volkanovski. He is the current champion. So 145-pound super fight against one of the greatest of all time and the new champion. I just think this is an awesome fight.
Yeah, and I think the UFC would make it well to strike while the iron's hot right now, right? Because right now, whose stock is higher than Max Holloway in this precise moment? You know, winning a fight very clearly on the judges' scorecards going into the last 10 seconds of the fight, points at the middle of the cage, throws down with one of the guys who has notoriously been very difficult to knock out. Granted, he has been knocked out a couple of times, but very difficult to knock out, goes in there and knocks him out with 1 second left to the point where it made Mark Goddard audibly yell out in the middle of the cage. That is incredible. His stock is so high right now. And to your point, Topuria right now is a global superstar. His win over Alexander Volkanovski, it absolutely made him a star in Spain. It made him a star in Georgia. It made him a star all across Europe. I think this would be a massive fight to make right now. I think it could headline a pay-per-view with no other title fight on it. I think that this is one of those ones that they have to make while the Max Holloway hype is high, because here's the other thing. You could go in there, run Max Holloway versus Volkanovski 8 or whatever number they're on at this point in time for a number one contender fight, and you could just have Volkanovski take all the shine off of him again. So for me, you got to make this fight now. You got to make this fight soon. Book it and get the pay-per-view numbers in.
Yeah, agreed completely. All right, this brings us to El Numero Uno, and it's a fight we've seen twice before in MMA. We've seen it before in kickboxing, but gosh, do we need to see the trilogy happen. It is the biggest fight the UFC could make right now. And it's Pereira versus Izzy Adesanya, numero 3. I think this would be a banger of a fight at middleweight, so they could complete the trilogy there. I think it's an even better fight at heavyweight, so we don't have to deal with the deep weight cuts and anyone feeling like, you know, that they're lagging. I love this fight at heavyweight for the trilogy. Excuse me, at light heavyweight for the trilogy, but I'll accept it at middleweight too. What you got?
Yeah, I wanted that light heavyweight as well. And for me, this is the biggest fight to make for a bunch of reasons. First of all, I'm not the guy out there who wants the rematch and the trilogies and all that kind of stuff to happen over and over and over again. But the fact of the matter is, here right now, you have, you know, my question when we talked about number two was, who's hotter than Max Holloway right now? Who has more hype on him than Max Holloway? The only person who possibly is the answer to that question is Alex Pereira, right? Like, Max Holloway might have the most hype on him right now, but Alex Pereira is a close second, possibly first, depending on who you ask, because that knockout over Jamahal Hill, as we just talked about, was this like big moment for him in stepping forward and looking like he's quote unquote the man. However, his last fight with Israel Adesanya did not end that way. And I think that's why this is such an intriguing matchup right now. The guy who we're talking about being, you know, sort of the hot commodity is the one coming off of a loss to the other guy, right? So you get that chance for him to avenge that loss. We get to do it at light heavyweight, which always seemed like something Israel Adesanya was interested in, right? Like, he tried that against Jan Blankovic. Like, he could try it again. We could see what that looks like again at light heavyweight. And in addition to that, too, it also answers all kinds of questions about, like, was that second one a fluke for Izzy? Does Pajeda still have his number? Can Izzy be a double champion? And then we're talking about him being one of the bigger pay-per-view draws that could be out there, right? If he was the light heavyweight champion. And, you know, hey, he still has a chance to go back and beat Dricus. I think all of those things make this the biggest fight the UFC could make right now.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's one that they have on their docket, one they're going to try to do. Let us know if we did this list right. Let us know if we messed this list up. We are accepting both love and hate feedback currently. Gumby, that wraps up this edition of Combat Countdown. It was a fun one. Let's keep the party rolling. What should we do next?
We're going to transition now to my interview with Austin Hubbard, who is coming off The Ultimate Fighter and will be making his re-debut in the UFC at UFC Vegas 90 next week. And we're going to get to that interview for you right now. All right, joining me today is Austin Hubbard, who fights Mykal Fiklak at UFC Vegas 90. That fight is on April 27th. So, Austin, I obviously want to get talking about the fight, but before I do, let's roll this thing back all the way to your first stint in the UFC. You alternate wins and losses for 7 fights. You go 3-4 overall. They give you the walk-in papers. How confident at that moment are you that this second run could and would happen?
Honestly, I wasn't. The closer I was to getting, you know, my walk-in papers, I was like, all right, I'll be back. I just got, you know, I kept getting told, though, they'll get me on a short nose fill-in or some things like that. But then, you know, as time went on, that just wasn't happening. I accepted a lot of fights for short notice for the UFC. They just, you know, those opportunities didn't pan out. And then it was really hard to get fights on the regional scene because, you know, not many people wanted to accept that fight. I did manage to finally get 2 fights. But, you know, it was as time went on, I definitely was losing hope. So when I got that Ultimate Fighter opportunity, I was very excited for that.
Well, and I was going to ask you, so then you get the Ultimate Fighter call, right? And on one hand, thank God, you know, like a chance to get back to the UFC, a chance to get back to the big time. But is there a part of you that was like kind of bummed that it was the Ultimate Fighter house? Because I know, like, you know, nobody's planning on spending 10 weeks away from their coaches, 10 weeks away from their family, 10 weeks away from their girlfriend, all that kind of stuff. Was part of you bummed that that's kind of the avenue you had to take?
Yeah, honestly, it was. You know, it was not the route I would have liked to gone. You know, it was very last minute. When I got contacted for it, it was just a few weeks out from the start of the show. So, I had no idea they were even doing another season. So yeah, it was kind of last minute, and I didn't have much time to really process it. You know, I just knew I had to take that opportunity, and, I took it, and, you know, it was, I made the best of it.
Absolutely. And you know, it's a unique season too, because I was talking to Kurt Hollebaugh not that long ago about that season. And, you know, a lot of seasons got the drama. They got the guys taking shots. And, like, this one, it felt like, other than, you know, a couple of guys giving side-eye glances once or twice over the course of the season, everybody seemed cool with one another. Was that your experience as well, that it was, like, kind of the chillest Ultimate Fighter house of all time?
Yeah, it was. You know, I feel fortunate that, you know, when you're cut off from the whole world like that for weeks on end, like, I don't think a lot of people understand, like, how boring that was. You know, no cell phone, no TV, no music. You can't leave unless it's somewhere they're carting to you to. And, you know, all those sorts of things. And you're locked in this house with people, you know, when you first get there, you don't know who they are. So it's a very different experience. But I feel fortunate enough that, yeah, for the most part, everyone was cool. You know, I think it would have made it a lot worse, you know, if there's a bunch of kind of jackasses in there giving you a hard time, irritating you every day, because it was, you know, kind of irritating as it was, just feeling like you're locked in prison.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, to your point, it was nice being there with guys who you know, respected and were there with the same goals as you and wanted the same things. But at the same time, you know, you're becoming close with these guys, particularly the guys on the veteran team. You all seemed very close in the lightweight division there, training together. And then you get to the second round, and it's only you left, right? Like, it's just you guys. Was it hard to, like, go to practice at that moment where you're like, okay, well, we did what we wanted to, but now it's time to eliminate each other?
Yeah, you know, it was a weird experience. It was definitely a growing experience for me. You know, it helped, you know, kind of refine that this is business. You got to do to handle the business aspect of, you know, fighting. Because, you know, we did all become pretty good friends. And, you know, you want to see your friends be successful, but then you end up fighting your friends, and your job is to beat them up and take their goals and dreams away. So, like you said, for me, it was a great growing experience in that sense. You know, putting the friendships aside and, you know, doing what you need to do. But yeah, it was different for sure. It wasn't like we were only just friends either, because, like, we lived together. We all roomed together. So yeah, it was kind of weird at first for sure.
And then you get the finale fight, right, with Hollebaugh, and it's, you know, a guy you're super familiar with, a guy who you then have to prepare for in addition to being friends with, and it doesn't go your way. But I want to ask where you are after that fight mentally, because on one hand, you know, probably back in the UFC for a second fight, although, you know, there's been guys who've gone to the finale and not gotten a second fight. On the other hand, like you said, you know, this is a guy you've been rooting for weeks, and you've wanted the best for. What is it like in those moments after a fight, you know, so bizarre like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's never easy to lose, and it's not something I ever want to do. but, you know, it was – I'm happy for him and his family, and, you know, his boys getting to walk out with him and going through that experience. And then, you know, he runs a gym back home. And I know that probably helps his gym out a ton. And I know his kids, you know, all train stuff, and they probably have, you know, their dad is their superhero, I'm sure. So I'm happy for him for sure. I think that's really cool for him and his family, but damn it, I sure did want to win that too.
Well, and then, you know, in addition to, you know, talking up, you know, former opponents and stuff like that, when I did talk to Hall about last time too, he mentioned you guys still kind of stay in contact, and some of the guys from the show still stay in contact, like Instagram group chat. Is that still going well? Are you all still chatting each other up pre-fights?
Yeah, we all, you know, check in time to time and talk to each other still. So yeah, it's cool, you know, hearing how everyone's doing and staying in contact and all those sorts of things. I think that's just another, you know, testament to show, you know, we did have some real friendships come out of that.
That's awesome to hear. Now, they're obviously all going to be rallying behind you coming up later this month, and that's in your second fight in this second stint against Mykal Fiklak. So I wanted to talk about preparing for Fiklak, because on one hand, you know, he's a guy with 9 pro fights, so it's not like there's nothing out there on him, but he debuted a year and a half ago. Nobody's seen him since. Does that make him sort of a tough guy to sort of prepare for, being that he's, you know, I mean, there's Cage Warriors fights and stuff out there too, but you know, we got one UFC fight, and it was darn near 2 years ago.
Yeah. You know, I've never been big into watching film on my opponents anyway. So, you know, but this time around, I have been watching film a lot more than usual. And, you know, I'm preparing for the toughest version of him, and I'm preparing for him you know, to be a well-rounded, you know, fighter. He's a very aggressive striker. He comes forward hard, and he's trying to put your lights out. And you could see that in the fights that are out there. So I think that kind of makes this a fun fight, because I feel like I do the same. You know, I'm going forward, and I'm just pressuring the whole time normally too. So, you know, I think it's the type of fight that could, you know, possibly win fight of the night.
Absolutely. Now, I want to go back to something you said in there real quick before we close out here, and that's that you're not usually a guy who watches fights, but you've done a bunch of it for this fight. Is there a reason for the change? Is it just like a thing we're doing later in our career here?
You know, so like I was saying earlier, I did really well win that finals. You know, I have a baby due 5 weeks after this fight. Thank you. And I really want to win. I really, really want to win. And I've been super focused. And I've been like more focused throughout camp. One of the things that was important to me for this camp was just making every day, every week, like a very serious thing. You know, I always, you know, train hard. But I think sometimes I leave behind the aspect of danger of what we actually do. You know, I go in there and I just go and do it. It doesn't, you know, I feel like sometimes I don't make it dangerous enough to where I get nerves and things like that. So, you know, this camp, like I said, I really want to win, and I'm trying to take a new approach and taking every week, every day serious, and leading into this fight. And you know, watching film actually makes me nervous. So, and I feel things, you know what I mean? And, so it just kind of helped me get like familiar, you know, with my visualization and things along those lines. You know, watching the film helps me, you know, make it more serious, so to speak. So that's kind of why I've been doing it, you know, this time around, opposed, you know, like I said before, I've never really watched it much before. I never, you know, never thought it was that big a deal, but I don't know. I guess we'll see how it goes this time around.
Well, and that leads me perfect to my last question. I always like to end these things with a prediction. So give me, how does this one end come April 27th?
You know, I think it's going to be a blazing first round. It's going to have a crazy start to the second round, but I think I'm getting a finish in either the first or second round. You know, he's throwing hard. I'm going to throw hard. I do believe I have a ground advantage. So I'm finishing him one way or another. I don't know outside of that, but I'm coming for that finish for sure. Like I said, I'm really determined to put on a great show and get on track with this stint, you know, my second time around in the UFC. And I'm very determined to not go win for loss and alternate. So, you know, I'm looking to start strong and stay strong.
All right. Well, you heard it here first, folks. This has been Austin Hubbard, who fights Mikal Thicklag at UFC Vegas 90. Once again, that fight, April 27th. Austin, thank you so much for the time, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for having me.
And that's going to do it for another episode of the Top Turtle MMA Podcast. We want to thank you, the fans, for tuning in each and every week. We would not have a show without you guys. We also want to thank our sponsor, Game Up Hard Hydration, and remind you guys that you can check us out on Twitter and Instagram at Top Turtle MMA in both of those locations. And until next week, I'm Daniel Gubby Freeland. He's Shockwave Dave Tremonte. We'll catch you then.